Everyone's heard of Stradivarius. It's the name associated with violins. Antonio Stradivari. They say he studied with Niccolo Amati. Another violin maker who worked just down the block from both of them was Giuseppe Guarneri del Gesù. These three violin makers, Amati, Guarneri, and Stradivarius, they set the standard for violin making, and they worked just a few doors away from each other at the same time in Cremona. The Cremonese art of violin making has been attributed a place on UNESCO's list of intangible cultural heritage of humanity. Welcome back to Accelerando. I'm Paula Tuttle. This week, we're visiting Cremona, Italy, in the early 18th century. The three violin makers recognized for the top-ranked violins in the world today. The only way to learn to make a violin is by studying one-on-one with another violin maker. Apprenticeship is the road to mastery. That's why traditional violin craftsmanship is given this special status from UNESCO, an organization that involves itself with everything that preserves humanity, from protecting the planet to fostering technology. UNESCO and the art world recognize the achievement of the violin makers of the world. A violin made by Stradivarius, Guarneri, or Amati is a work of art that gets put to work. You would never put a painting by Rembrandt in the hands of anyone but the museum curator. The violin Paganini played most was a Guarneri del Gesù. Today, the violin is for the most part displayed in a museum in Genoa. It gets played periodically, but it's not owned by an individual violinist, like lots of the finest instruments. But many violinists get to hold these priceless instruments in their hands every day and take them home and keep them there. It's really mind-boggling. What's even more astounding? The violins made in 1700 in Cremona are the measuring stick for violins today. Amati, Stradivari, and Guarneri, they arrived at the patterns we still use today. There are others too, Gerfriller, Ruggieri, and more. It was a time when the instrument was perfected, and most instruments today have their genetics in the 17th century Cremona.
My mind is still boggled by the fact that of the shape of a violin, that we arrived at this shape so many hundreds of years ago, and it's the same today. And at first glance, you might think it's shaped a particular way, you know, to allow room for the bow here, and it looks kind of fancy, and it's a nice shape, it's an appealing look. But it actually evolved this way for very scientific reasons.
That was Joshua Bell in the documentary Two Gentlemen of Cremona. The violin as we know it was developed by Amati around 1600, and there's a family business there. And rumor has it, Stradivari studied with Niccolo Amati around 1670. Giuseppe Guarneri del Gesù was born around 1700. During the last 20 years of Stradivarius's life, the three rival violin shops were in business just a few doors away.
So the story is that there's a guy at that time who's walking along the street, and all three of these shops seem to be basically on the same street in Cremona. And from the Amati shop, it said, best violins in Italy. And then it got to the Guarneri shop and it said, best violins in Europe. And then it got to the Stradivari shop and it said, best violins on this street. That's the old joke.
That was Peter Ujain in the documentary Violin Masters, Two Gentlemen of Cremona. Some of the violins made by Stradivarius and Guarneri are worth over $3 million. I know that one sold for over $15 million recently. One collector of these violins is David Fulton. Fulton is a violinist who made enough money to buy violins of this stature because he was vice president of Microsoft's database products, and before that, co-founder of Fox Software. Anyways, I mention that because he collected 28 instruments, violins, violas, and cellos, all by the greatest makers of Cremona, including 8 Stradivariuses, 8 Giuseppe Guarneri del Gesus, and an assortment of others, including Amati, Montagnana, Guadagnini, and more. He spent tens of millions of dollars on these instruments. So why did he do it? He said it's a kind of madness that seizes you. It's a kind of violin erotica. He said that when he bought his first good violin, a 1698 Pietro Guarneri, thought he was done. And 10 years later, he started buying more and more violins. First, he wanted a Strad, and then the buying continued until he owned 28 instruments. It's one of the finest collections. Later on, when he sold almost all of his collection, he kept the first 2 violins, along with 2 others, a Guadagnini viola and a Wohler Brothers copy of a Del Gesu. Fulton, he published a book about all of his violins, also a website, and he made at least 2 documentaries. Some of these documentaries have awards. All of them are engaging, sometimes humorous, but they contain a good bit of historical information. It's also an adventure, as he tells the stories about acquiring the instruments, their previous owners, the great players he encountered, and the makers and the history. This is David Fulton.
If you knew the real story of these instruments as they've moved through history over the years, it'd be so much more interesting than the stories in the red violin.
Fulton's origin story, it reads like a typical youth. He went to elementary school in Dayton, Ohio. All the students were encouraged to play an instrument. He ends up as a concertmaster in college at the University of Chicago. There, he gets to play a fine violin owned by the university. Getting to play this first famous violin, along with a friend he made at the university, both of these things led to his madness. William Sloan was investigating fine cellos, and then Fulton started looking into fine violins. One purchase led to another. It was a real addiction. He realized he had become a collector when he couldn't give up one instrument for another. He needed both. He wanted them all. And now, like a recovering addict, he admits his violin playing wouldn't have suffered one bit if he'd stopped at the very first fiddle, the Guarneri titled Peter of Mantua. It wasn't a Del Gesu or a Strad, but it did help others win competitions. There's a great controversy in the best way for a great instrument to thrive. Should it be played? Should it be maintained? Both. Is there a happy medium? Probably yes to all. Fulton said this, if a violin has not been played upon for a long period of time, it takes a while to wake up. It might take anywhere from a few weeks to a few months to wake up. I've seen this again and again, but the fact is that exposing them to constant wear is not the way to preserve them. They're not immortal, and they're being used up. It's a good thing there are good violin makers today. It's essential. And he also says, a poor Strad is not going to be superior to a fine modern instrument. This is why you need to inspect an instrument before buying. Teresio has an online auction that's been going on for 25 years. And there's an auction going on right now. The instruments are available for viewing and trying in New York, and there's bidding going on as we speak. The auction closes on March 14th. Included in the sale are a Guadagnini violin, estimated to go for $600,000, but there are no bids as of March 3rd. It has certificates from Bein & Fouchy and Teresio, and they claim that there were certificates from other houses like Wurlitzer and Hill. They're not available, and they offer a video of a violinist performing an excerpt on it. You get nice photos and a few measurements. This has become a really successful business. Teresio took over the violin shop at 250 West 54th Street that was Jacques Francais of New York. Francais was an icon in the violin world. The story goes, He could authenticate a violin and its worth at a single glance. He's seen all the greatest violins at one time or another. It's said he negotiated 6 to 10 sales a year of the Strads and Del Jesus, and those sales amounted to half of the sales all over the world. When Francais retired, his luthier, René Morel, he took over the shop. And then after a bit, Tricio took over the shop with Morel on staff as the adjuster. Maybe you've heard the phrase, never open a restaurant in a place where a restaurant failed. Well, the opposite seems to be true. The most famous violin shop is the best place to open a new violin shop. And Tricio is now trading instruments worldwide. I sold an Italian cello there in 2008. I was satisfied with the price I got, but of course I wonder, what if the stock market had not crashed at that exact time? What would I have gotten? It's a bit of a risk, and you get to set the bottom price you'll accept. They start bidding lower than that, and you get to watch the bidding from your computer. It can be quite exciting. I've never been a gambler, but I get the thrill of it. Tricio started in 1999, but they took over the Francais Morel space around the time I sold my Italian cello. Today, they have 8 auctions a year, with offices in New York, London, and Berlin. Midori bought her Strad from Tricio recently. Another Strad sold for over $15 million on Tricio. There are some interesting things about the way they conduct business. They take a much smaller fraction of the sale, so that entices the sellers. And there's a first-in, last-out rule for the buyers, which gives them an 18% discount. I'm not suggesting what you do to sell your instrument, but there's no reason not to check out the bidding on the Tricio auction. They make it easy to follow the bidding on an instrument. So for whatever reason you want to watch, for example, there's a violin by Erwin Hertel. It's being auctioned now, and Pittsburghers might know the name. He was the violin shop owner here in the 60s. We have a fine violin maker here. Like Erwin Hertel, he migrated from New York. Philip and Jane has a shop on Penn Avenue. I own one of his cellos. Besides being a wonderful instrument, he keeps it in top condition because I visit him frequently. If you could only take your Stradivarius back to the maker too, it would be the best. The art has been passed down, one maker at a time, for 600 years. Support your local violin maker, whoever it be. That's all for this week. Thanks again for listening and sharing this episode. We'll see you next time.